stories. Let's thank Eric W. again. Next, we have Ryan A. from the Gulf Corridor area.
Hey everybody, I'm an acronym Ryan.
Hey Ryan.
Good Lord. Yeah, I'm also very nervous. You know, before I get started, I used to come to this convention in particular, and I would sit in the back of these workshops, and I would listen very carefully to the people that spoke, and I would leave, and I would talk to other people that I came with, and they always sounded like they had these like really great, brilliant experiences. Listen to these speakers, and like I never, you know, I didn't get that, and it really frustrated me. It felt like I was missing something. Like I there was something wrong with me that I couldn't process this in the same way that they did, and you know, so I kept coming back. You know, this is like my fourth or fifth time here clean. You know, I came a couple times not clean, and like I really don't feel like I have ever really. Like, there are certain speakers that I can get on board with, and then there are other speakers where it's like, I just kind of feel like I'm at a loss. Like, I walk out, and I'm lucky if I can glean a couple little nuggets of good recovery stuff on them. So if you're in here, and you're new or old, whatever, and you don't get anything out of a lot of the speakers that you go to, I want you to know that it's okay, and you can still come in here to Narcotics Anonymous and still find recovery. You know, it doesn't make you weird. That you have a hard time in these kind of situations. You know, for me, the real meat of recovery isn't in these kind of big lecture halls, you know, listening to people that I don't know talk. It's about me getting down with, you know, some of the people I got clean with, some of the people I, you know, have met in recovery and just talking recovery, you know, hashing it out that way instead of, you know, coming in here and listening to somebody talk at me. You know, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another really is, it's an easy topic for me to speak about because I don't feel like I can tell you much about recovery without tying it into that. You know, I tried for a number of years to work a Narcotics Anonymous program by myself, and it always led to more pain, more using, and just further down the spiral. It wasn't until I was willing to come in here and you know, sit down, be quiet, and take suggestions that things really started to get better for me. You know, just to kind of give you a little bit of background on me. You know, I started using young, like most people do. And the way I did it, I had a group of people that I ran with. And like as time went on, the people changed and the substances changed and what we did changed. But I always, you know, had one or two people that I can kind of point to and be like, at least I'm not doing what that person is doing. And, you know, that person changed as time went on. And, you know, eventually we started to get, you know, more and more consequences from the things we were doing. And, you know, for me, you know, originally it was, you know, just kind of getting caught up. You know, people got DUIs and then it went into longer jail stays, you know, people ODing, dying, people going to prison, shit like that. And I always thought that it was because they were doing it wrong. And then I got arrested for the first time, and I was like, well, obviously, you know, it has nothing to do with drugs, it's just a bad situation, you know, blah, 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 blah. And so that was what kind of led me into Narcotics Anonymous for the first time. I was 18 when I came to my first meeting, I was 28 when I got clean. And, yeah, I came to meetings for, you know, probably the first 5 years, just getting papers signed, and I thought it was ridiculous. You know, Narcotics Anonymous was for people with a problem, and I obviously didn't have a problem. You know, I was just a victim of circumstance. You know, whether it was, you know, I shouldn't have talked to those people, I shouldn't have done this thing, you know, cops just, you know, were out for me, whatever it was obviously not the drugs, and it was obviously not a problem. And, you know, it went on like that. You know, consequences just kind of got worse. And for me, I had this cycle where I would get arrested, go to jail. They'd send me to meetings. And then I'd get done with probation or whatever I had. and then I'd, you know, get arrested, go to jail. And I did that three times. And at the end of that, my solution was to kind of go underground, so to speak. It's like, you know, I pretty much kind of retired to wherever I was living at the time and just wouldn't leave. You know, and in this kind of, about that time, well, it's like somewhere in that process, I met a girl and she used like I did, and we were totally going to fix each other. That was going to be a thing that was going to happen. And eventually, she got to a point where she was like, look, I think I have a problem. I'm like, well, that's great, because you know what? I know where people with problems go. They go to Narcotics Anonymous, and I can go here and I can get you set up. And so that was what kind of got me going to meetings, not having papers signed. And, you know, I lied about whatever clean time I had. You know, I treated a lot of people in the rooms poorly, you know. I celebrated a fake year. Let's see. But yeah, you know, it's just, I was running around kind of trying to please her, in a sense. And things on my side just kind of continually got worse. And, you know, I was doing my isolation thing. She was pretty much the only person I talked to at the time in any meaningful way. You know, it's like I'd come in here and, you know, I used to think open-mindedness was coming to meetings and talking to people and then listening politely while they said words at me, and then I'd just go do whatever the fuck I want to do. And I did that for a while. And all that time, my addiction was progressing. It was getting worse. You know, I didn't have a lot of those kind of very acute external consequences. Like, you know, I wasn't getting arrested at that point. You know, I hadn't been to jail in a while, but I was kind of tearing myself apart on the inside. You know, I was covertly dismantling my life and turning it into drugs and hiding it as best I could. And it wasn't any direct external thing that really convinced me that I have a problem. Excuse me. Excuse me. It was the internal consequences. It was waking up day after day and trying to hash out a plan to find the next one, trying to hash out a plan, you know, where do I have to go, who do I have to talk to, who do I have to steal from to get the next high. And just doing that day after day and living with that day after day just started to eat me up inside, man. Because I had gone through all these, you know, really brutal external consequences. You know, I had, you know, had to, you know, move out in the middle of the night a couple places, but it's like, now it's like I had a stable living situation, you know, it's like I had this girl who I talked to, but I still just couldn't deal with being me. I couldn't deal with the life that I had. And for me, you know, all that kind of came to a head December 28th, 2011, my clean date, and it was about 3 days after Christmas, and we had seen my family for Christmas. And I had taken the meager stuff that my family had gotten me for Christmas, and I liquidated it, and I turned it into drugs, and that was about, you know, the last of anything that I had that I could do that with. You know, it was 3 days after Christmas, and I didn't have anybody I could steal from. I just gave up. You know, I couldn't do it anymore. And I can't remember if it was my sponsor or not. Like, I had somebody who I called my sponsor up until that point, but I didn't really use them as a sponsor in any meaningful way. I either called my sponsor or somebody else in my network, and I was like, look, I can't do this. What do I do? And they're like, go to a meeting. You know? Gave me those kind of basic suggestions we get when we get in here. You know, go to a meeting. Start a network. Talk to people about what's really going on with you. Be of service, and don't use no matter what, no matter what. And I went into these meetings where I had treated people rather poorly for a long time. You know, it's like people had seen me coming in and out of meetings for, you know, the better part of 10 years at that point. And a lot of them, you know, I had treated poorly, but it was these same people who I had an established relationship with, even if it was a bad relationship, who kind of had an idea of where I was coming from. And regardless of how they felt about me, and regardless of how I felt about them, they were willing to help me out if I was willing to accept the help. You know, and that to me relates to that therapeutic value. You know, it doesn't matter how I feel about any of you or how any of you feel about me. It's about that we're in here, you know, for the same common cause. Stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live, man. So I got clean and I started doing those basic things, and I still thought, you know, because I had been coming to meetings for a long time, I still kind of thought NA was bullshit, but I was willing to have a go at it. And, you know, my sponsor gave me lots of suggestions, and most of them I thought were bullshit, but I did them anyway. I did a lot of things in my early recovery. You know, I did a lot of things I didn't want to do for reasons I didn't understand. And it helped me in ways that I couldn't possibly have understood at that point. You know, that establishing a network, you know, just showing up at meetings all the time, and just trying to build a set of new habits apart from the bad ones I came in with. So what I had, it's about 90 days clean. You know, that girl I brought up earlier, she bailed. And like, we were planning on coming, not her, but like, I was planning on coming to CPRCNA that year, and I recruited these two young kids who were like just as fresh in recovery as me, but about 10 years younger, to come with me. And my sponsor and my network kind of thought it was a really stupid idea. And so I brought these two kids with me, and I found out, you know, I'm kind of running around, go to workshops at the convention with them. And I found out at this convention that that same girl was fucking somebody else in the rooms. And I was flipping my shit, man. Like, I was ready to commit an act of violence. And it was those, you know, two young dudes that kind of corralled me that entire weekend. You know, they saved my fucking life. And, you know, I showed up out front. You know, my sponsor was smoking cigarettes. And I went up to him and I was like, what do I do? You know, what do I do? And he dragged me inside, back when this area here was the registration area, and he stuck me behind a cash register, and he said, you do this for a couple hours. And I'm like, well, how is that supposed to help me? And he's like, just do it. And I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. And that was the best 2 hours of my weekend. I mean, it was the 2 hours where, through helping other people, I could stop thinking about my own bullshit. And that was infinitely valuable to me. And, you know, I, even after all that happened, you know, I'm still here, I'm still clean. And I have had the opportunity to be of service in a number of other ways. And I feel like, you know, my favorite methods of service often only involve a couple people, and they're often not on a stage like this. I really like H&I because, particularly the jail, because I have a little bit of experience with jail and going in there and talking to dudes. You know, they appreciate somebody coming in and talking to them. And all too often, like, I go in and I used to go in very regularly. I don't go in that regularly anymore. But I had kind of a rapport with the guys. And, like, there was a certain set of guys that would always come in. And every once in a while, you know, someone would be absent the next week, and it was, you know, he got out, and, you know, sometimes a couple weeks after that, we'd found out that he OD'd. And every once in a while, you know, taking meetings into jails and rehabs, you know, you, because usually I start off my share talking about my home group. My home group is Saturday Night Live. It's a community Lutheran church in Sterling, 8 p.m. every Saturday. And I usually kind of give that spiel when I'm going into an H&I meeting. And I tell people when they get out, come see me. And every once in a while, I get somebody that gets out, and they do come see me. But more often than not, I'm hearing about people ODing or people going back in. And so it blows my mind when people do come up to me and talk to me. You know, that one act helping another thing, I was at home during my wife's home group, and I don't know the story from the other end, but apparently there was this dude who's having trouble sitting through a meeting, and they pretty much gave him my number and said, you know, you can't sit in the meeting, that's fine, go call this guy, he'll talk to you. And I can't even remember his name, but I talked to him for like 45 minutes. And, you know, he was a father of a young kid. You know, my son was born, you know, 4.5 months ago, and he was just sick as hell, puking out the side of his car, and it just crushed me on the inside, because he is me, you know, 5 years ago. You know, I didn't have a kid at the time, but, you know, all the stuff he was talking to me about, you know, sometimes I like to think that I've been clean a little while, and so, well, I like to think that, you know, I am still as desperate as I was the day I got here. Like, I like to think that all that kind of horror and misery hasn't faded that much, but things like that show me that after time, you know, if I'm not staying up with my network, if I'm not staying up with newcomers, you know, some of that color starts to fade from the picture, you know, and some of that clarity is lost, but things like that just bring me back right to square one. You know, they are a perfect illustration of why I am here and why it is important for me to keep doing it, what it is that I do. You know, a couple years on, I don't do a whole lot different today for my recovery than I did starting out. It's still all about staying up with my network and going to meetings and just, you know, taking basic care of my recovery. I did not get clean and get a six-figure job. You know, my go-tos are, I have a place to live, the bills are paid, I have a fridge with food in it, I have a car that's paid for, and I'm not sleeping in it. I have people in my life, people that I want in my life, people that want me in their lives, and that call me and talk to me about things. And all this may sound like, you know, real basic stuff, but these were not givens in my life. And I have an understanding that the life I have today isn't Ryan's life. You know, the life I have today is a direct result of developing a life through the experience of people in the program. You know, when I got to NA, I did not know. Not only did I not know how to live life without the use of drugs, I didn't know how to live life. You know, I didn't know how to pay bills. I didn't know how to keep a job. And it's the people in the rooms that taught me these kind of things. The life I have today is a result of your help. And so, you know, I'll end with this. You know, I know some of you. I don't know all of you. But I do love you. And I think you all have something to offer me, even though I might not know what that is. So whether you're new or you've been here a while, I need you here. Please stay and help me with my recovery. And maybe if you'll allow me, I can help you with yours. And that's what I got. Thanks for letting me share.